thought I was late. I guess I'm not late, but there's no one else here. So you know what? Welcome to the Ed Show, number 38. My name's Rick Claus, and I guess I'm going solo today. Good thing, because we only have a small few items of news I wanted to share with you guys, just in case you wanted to stay up to date with what's happening in the month of October and beyond. First off, there is a jumpstart that's going on with my good friend Joey Snow and Stephen Rose, who's going to be doing a jumpstart on October the 18th, which is going to be taking place online. The website you can go to is aka.ms/win8itprojs. And obviously, with someone like Stephen Rose and Joey Snow talking, it's going to be about Windows 8 for IT professionals. And it's going to be about a day long and very, very cool stuff. Free to attend, live Q&A. They're always fun. I love doing jump starts. I know Joey and Stephen are going to do a good job. So check that one out on October the 18th. Second piece of news is, oh, look, another jump start, which is going to be myself and Ed Lieberman on October the 23rd and October the 24th. So it's a two-day one. Now, this one's a little bit different. This one's specifically for an exam prep for the upgrading your certification skills to Windows Server 2012, otherwise known as 70-417, I do believe, upgrade exam. And that particular one has a short URL of aka.ms/jump417. Both of those links will be inside the show notes down below. But you know what? Let me get out of the way and get you in touch with an interview I did with Matt Garson. He is a senior program manager on the storage and file subsystems team with Windows, both Windows Client and Windows Server. And I sat down and chatted with him in a boardroom to talk about the new file system that's known as REFS, or REFS, for the Resilient File System. Cool stuff about how it works, how it integrates with storage spaces. And you know what? Let me get out of your way. We'll cut to that video now and check out Matt and see what he's got to say.
So my name is Matt Garson. I work in the storage and file system team. And I've been on that team for about 5 years now out of college. And for Windows 8 and Windows Server 2012, I worked on REFS and storage spaces for the most part. My background is primarily in file systems, so that's kind of why I ended up working where I am now. I'm very happy about where I am.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I got asked an awful lot of questions about was, quite simply put, now with this new file system, do I have to now plan to go ahead and to reformat all of my servers from NTFS over to the new file system, or is there some kind of middle ground? What can you tell me about the new file system?
Yeah, so I think to answer the kind of immediate question first, in general in Windows Server 2012, our recommendation to customers is that they continue to use NTFS. It's the default file system, and for most workloads, it is what we recommend. There are a variety of reasons for that. NTFS is something that our customers have had for years now and have had a chance to become very comfortable with it and understand it very well. That said, REFS does provide some new capabilities. Data integrity is certainly one of the most valuable capabilities, but there's other enhancements as well. And what we're basically saying is that customers who are interested in REFS, those capabilities that are not possible as part of NTFS, then they can consider using REFS as part of a deployment, but there are some considerations that are documented, and customers just need to think through which file system is the right one for them and understand in the short term what the trade-offs are. One of the things that we've sort of pointed out is that there is a planned evolution of REFS where it is intended to eventually replace NTFS. And that's not happening though in Windows Server 2012. So this is the initial release of REFS. It does provide some new capabilities for those customers who have needs in those areas. But for most customers, NTFS is what we continue to recommend.
From a functionality standpoint, what would you say would be the quick hit indicators that I should, hey, this sounds like a good thing that I could use REFS for? Is it size? Is it specific workloads? Like, what do you recommend?
For the most part, in Server 2012, the primary workload where REFS would be recommended is going to be a file server workload where customers feel like they need to basically have the data integrity that REFS can provide. In other words, REFS can detect when corruption has occurred to a file, And ReFS, when it's running in conjunction with storage spaces, can both detect that corruption and then automatically correct it. So the idea is that customers who are consolidating large workloads, file server workloads, and they have large amounts of file server type data, then we typically hear from customers that things like having to recover files from backup or from tape, or just to reduce the number of times when someone, an end user, is calling help desk because their file isn't accessible or their file isn't openable. Well, ReFS's ability to detect corruption and then repair that can reduce the likelihood of that happening. Another benefit of ReFS is going to be the fact that it's designed from the ground up to maximize online operation and availability. There's no check disk with ReFS.
Actually, I noticed on the command line, you try to run it, and it says, it's not required for this
time. Exactly. So one of the things that our customers have told us is that taking the volume offline to repair corruption is something that can be very challenging. And it's worth mentioning that in Server 2012 and Windows 8, NTFS has had some very significant engineering work done to improve the check disk experience. So just as a data point, in Server 2008 R2, if you have a volume with 100 million files, check disk run times will be somewhere, a few hours probably. But in Server 2012, it'll be seconds. So some very significant engineering work has been done in NTFS in Windows Server 2012. That said, with ReFS, there is no check disk because the fundamental design goal was saying, we don't take the volume offline even if there is corruption. So there's a degree of resiliency that's built into ReFS that allows us to sort of deliver maximized online operation without having to take the volume offline.
Cool stuff. Now, you mentioned earlier about having ReFS and storage spaces together. Are they tied at the hip? Do they have to be in place? Or can you implement ReFS without having storage spaces?
They're actually very separable components. Okay. So storage spaces and ReFS are both new in Server 2012 and Windows 8. The idea, though, taking a step back from the features, is that we wanted to provide Windows customers with a end-to-end storage solution, something that delivers very cost-effective storage capabilities while still providing a high degree of availability, resiliency, and scale. And storage spaces and ReFS address different parts of that problem, that need that our customers have described to us in different perspectives. So storage spaces fundamentally is a storage virtualization platform. It's designed to take bunches of disks together and create storage pools. So we take these physical objects and we aggregate them. And that creates a virtual object, the storage pool, which becomes a unit of management. And then from the storage pool, you in turn create one or more virtual disks. So it's a very flexible, scalable model. And as part of that, we can provide some capabilities around resiliency to disk failure, as well as integration with other pieces in the Server 2012 stack, like Windows failover clustering. Now, so storage spaces is this platform, and ReFS as a file system integrates on top of it. You can run storage spaces with NTFS, and in Server 2012, that is what we recommend. And you can run ReFS on storage spaces or on other storage platforms. But taken together, they provide some really exciting capabilities. We think there's some really interesting benefits for our customers here. Maybe I'll just draw it quickly on the board here. So what I want to do now is kind of illustrate what we've been talking about, storage spaces and ReFS, and how the combination of these two features provide a platform that delivers resiliency to disk failure. It delivers some interesting capabilities around availability of data, data integrity, and it sort of provides an end-to-end storage platform that provides our customers with a very effective, cost-effective storage option. Mm-hmm. So fundamentally with storage spaces, we take a bunch of disks, and I'm terrible at drawing, but I think it'll get the...
I was actually just going to say that I'm going to need you to switch to the black marker, not the blue one, because the black one has some more juice to it.
Yeah, let's do that.
You got it.
Okay, so the idea with storage spaces is we take a bunch of disks, and these are just disks in a JBOD, just a bunch of disks, in other words. So the disks are an enclosure. We take these physical objects, and we virtualize them to create a storage pool. So now we've gone from many disks to a single storage pool, although you can create multiple storage pools. The idea here is that in contrast to the way Windows worked historically, where if you expose a disk to Windows, you get a disk to manage. So I have an enclosure with 60 disks, and I plug it into Windows, and I have 60 disks to manage. That's not necessarily scalable. If we think about the direction where customers are going in terms of data set sizes and manageability and wanting to do things like consolidate, it's very important that we have a very scalable unit of management. So thinking back to what storage spaces provides, taking those physical disks, and then from those physical disks creating a storage pool, instead of managing disks, you're now creating a pool of disks. And because it's virtualized, because Windows is providing this platform, you can configure a variety of different capabilities depending on what the needs of your requirement, your deployment are. So from the storage pool, we in turn create virtual disks. Now, even though these are virtual objects, they instantiate to Windows in a way that's familiar to both applications and administrators. So you get benefits around management, and applications just work. Now, these virtual disks can be configured with attributes like resiliency to disk failure. That's very important for all of our customers. We know that disks fail, we know that data is important, and so being able to provide resiliency at this level means that customers can deploy large amounts of data using cost-effective commodity hardware and get the resiliency, which in turn will give them the availability and the uptime that they need. So this is sort of what the model of storage spaces looks like. We take physical objects to virtual, and then from there we create a virtual disk, which in turn we expose to Windows. Now, ReFS as a file system is a choice that you can use to format one of these disks, with these virtual disks that we call a space. You can use NTFS or you can use ReFS, but I want to talk about ReFS today for a little bit. So basically you would format a space, a virtual disk, with ReFS. What that gives you then is some of the capabilities I've been talking about. So now you have data integrity, and with ReFS, there's basically two modes. The first is that file system metadata is always protected with data integrity. Well, what is data integrity? Basically, there are two mechanisms we use to provide this. The first is what we call allocate on write, and the second is checksums. The idea is that allocate on write ensures that you never overwrite data in place. You're always writing to new locations. The benefit of that is that in the event of, say, a power failure or some other significant system failure, data will have been written to a new location, and so the previous data will have been untouched. So in the event of a failure like that, you can recover very rapidly. Whereas in an update-in-place model where data is being overwritten, you're in this indeterminate state because you don't know what data has actually been written to the disk and what data may have been still somewhere in a buffer or in a cache. The idea is that it gives you a robust mechanism, a robust way to update data to the disk. But there's another piece of this, which is what happens when the data is on the disk. That's where the checksums I mentioned come into play. So once the data is on the disk, we use checksums to ensure that the data doesn't change, so that we know that the data that we wrote is the data that is there when we go to read it. So like I was saying, file system metadata is always protected with these two mechanisms. That lets us provide the availability and resiliency to file system corruption that I was describing earlier. If the file system metadata is protected, then you have a very resilient system against things like corruptions that would historically cause you to, I don't know, lose directories or have to take the volume offline to do something like recover from a backup. With user data, there's a very flexible model. You can choose data integrity optionally. So there are some applications out there, for example, that have their own very sophisticated data integrity capabilities. You wouldn't necessarily need to use ReFS's integrity capabilities with those applications. But then there are all those applications that don't have data integrity, and types of data, like I was mentioning earlier, information worker type data, things like your office documents, Word files, photos, things that don't have integrity built in. And for that, ReFS's data integrity on user data is really helpful, because if corruption happens, then ReFS will detect it. And if we're running on top of storage spaces, and in particular a mirrored storage space, if we detect corruption, then we'll automatically repair it. So the combination of ReFS and storage spaces allows us to do things like be resilient to disk failure. It allows us to deploy data without having to worry about what happens if there's corruption, because ReFS will detect it and correct it, and that prevents things like having to take the volume offline for recovery or having to recover from a backup. So you have a system that's designed to be resilient and it's designed to provide some new capabilities in Windows Server 2012.
You mentioned this as an example with using mirror protection as far as your store spaces are concerned. Does this also apply to the other types of resilient file systems?
Yeah, so
I meant file systems.
Storage spaces.
Storage spaces, yeah.
So there are three types of storage spaces or virtual disks. The first is what we call a simple space, and it actually doesn't provide any resiliency. It's designed for workloads where resiliency or backups are happening at a higher level, things are replicated, or the data is temporary in nature. It's designed to provide maximum performance, basically. Then there are mirrored storage spaces, which can be configured to provide either two or three copies of data, providing resiliency to either one or two disk failures. Mirrored storage spaces are required for ReFS to correct when corruption is detected. The last type of space is what we call a parity space. And a parity space is resilient to single disk failure, but it's really designed for highly sequential append type workloads, things like backup or archive. So for ReFS to do its automatic correction when corruption happens, you need to use a mirrored storage space. But spaces, again, the fact that spaces and ReFS are separable, does provide you with some other alternatives because we recognize that Windows customers have lots of different workloads. And someone might decide to use simple spaces because they don't need resiliency, or someone who has a, like I was saying, a very sequential append workload like a backup or an archive. They could use parity spaces.
I don't know if you can answer this one, but I had this question come up and ask me when I was down for TechEds in New Zealand and Australia. Do you have a limited number of disks you can have inside the pool when you're making your mirrored space, or is it unlimited number of disks and it just works out where to place the mirrored chunks?
Yeah, so basically there are some best practices that we have around how to size disk pools and the number of physical disks. So basically what we recommend is up to 160 disks in a pool, but keep in mind that you can create multiple pools. So if you happen to have an enclosure that has just a huge number of disks, maybe 100 disks, or I guess actually it would be like a couple hundred disks, 300 disks, then you would just segment it to create, say, two pools, each of 160 disks. Mm-hmm. And you can just continue to scale in that way. But our recommendation in Server 2012 is to limit a storage pool to 160 disks.
And then you layer your virtual disk on top of that when you make your type of space, and you can have more than five disks inside a mirrored space?
Yeah, exactly. So again, as I was saying earlier, you can create multiple pools, and from that pool, from a given pool, you can create multiple storage spaces. And even though they're all coming from the same storage pool, you can configure those multiple storage spaces with different attributes. So they don't all have to be mirrored, for example. You could create a storage pool with some spaces that are simple, some that are mirrored, and some that are parity. There's actually another sort of interesting attribute that we have, which is the ability to map a particular storage space to a subset of disks within a pool. The idea is that there will be customers who have workloads where they may need a mix of hardware. So they might need some SSDs for workloads that have a lot of very intensive read and write operations. And then they might have some workloads where capacity is more important, performance is less important. And so what you could do is you create a storage space that is backed by only those SSDs, even though it's all coming from the same pool. And then you create another storage space that is backed only by the high capacity hard disks. That ensures that all the operations that go to the storage space that's backed by the SSD get the benefits of that hardware. And then the workload that doesn't need the performance, it can just run perfectly fine on the storage space backed by the high-capacity, low-performant hard disk. So there's some granularity, and there's some ways to segment workloads so customers, as we were talking about earlier, things like consolidation and virtualization, wanting to be able to get the hardware that they need for the workload, but still have a simplified management model, not have to have everything so separable.
How about some hard numbers on ReFS for sizing-wise? Because you mentioned it's next generation, where we're headed. What are some scale sizes? I mean, you mentioned an earlier example of an NTFS with like 100,000 files on it or something like that would take so long to be able to do a check disk. What sort of size and scope are we talking about with the new file system? Are we going to end up creating some bottlenecks in the future because it's too constrained?
Well, so ReFS is scalability is one of the kind of foundational design goals for ReFS. So that means we need to be thinking about where customers are going to be heading in the next 10, 20 years. NTFS, it was designed in the early 1990s, and it has evolved really remarkably over that time period. If you think about hardware that was available back in the early 90s, and you think about data set sizes, and you look at where we are today, and customers have terabytes and even petabytes of data, NTFS's evolution has been really remarkable. That said, we know there are certain inherent architectural limitations with NTFS. For example, the NTFS volumes, the maximum volume size is about 255 terabytes. That might be a lot even for some customers today, but we know that in the future we need to go even beyond that, to petabytes and even beyond petabytes. So the REFS volumes, the way in which we think about scale, actually is very flexible. We think about scale in terms of being able to have a small number of very large files, say hundreds of terabytes in size or even petabytes in size eventually, or we think about scale where you have billions of directories, and each of those directories could in turn have billions of files. So the REFS architecture itself is designed to scale in that manner.
How about what I would call some hard stops? When can you not use REFS if you're deciding for a file server workload,
yeah,
as you're talking about? Like, what are some situations where I can't use it?
So in Windows Server 2012, there are some limitations around when we recommend using REFS. And really, those are cases, that's why I was saying earlier, NTFS kind of remains the recommended default. Mm-hmm. So there are certain things where REFS is not compatible with Server 2012. So clustered shared volume, that's going to be something that's used for Hyper-V, and it's also used for storage spaces to provide a scale-out model. So CSV and REFS are not compatible in Windows Server 2012. Mm-hmm. Dedupe is also something that's not compatible with REFS and Server 2012.
Okay.
Really, the idea is that REFS makes sense for customers who might be deploying a file server but don't necessarily need some of the other management and scale capabilities that the file server provides. So a simple file server, you could also use failover clustering. REFS supports that, but not CSV.
Mm-hmm.
But really, NTFS is probably the best choice for most workloads.
Okay. One last thing about the compatibility aspect, and I just mentioned it because of the range of years. I'm assuming developers and people that are working with stuff have a common file set API kind of thing to be using to call. Is there going to be changes to that they're going to have to worry about?
Yeah, actually, that's another really nice question, because one of the other goals for REFS was recognizing how customers and developers have had years to sort of build applications on top of Windows, mm-hmm, and we wanted to maximize application compatibility, which is always a challenge with a new file system. So application compatibility with NTFS was one of our very important design goals. I'll just kind of draw what it looks like architecturally to give people an illustration of how we did this.
Sure.
So if we say this is NTFS, there's broadly two layers. There's an upper layer where there are APIs, and there's a lower layer where there's sort of the on-disk engine, which is responsible for writing everything to the disk.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the API layer. So for REFS, what we did is we ported forward the bulk of the NTFS APIs. In some cases, we talked to developers, we talked to customers, and we looked and we said, there are NTFS APIs that people aren't using, or there were certain design decisions that were made in NTFS historically that are no longer appropriate, architectural, scalable issues like that. So that's why I was saying we ported forward the bulk of NTFS APIs, with a few cases where we decided to deprecate things that weren't used or were incompatible with other design goals. But APIs are ported forward, and then we replace the NTFS on-disk engine with a new on-disk engine that's called MinStore. And MinStore is where the bulk of the new capabilities in REFS are built. So the allocate and write, the checksums, the scalable data structures, all of that exists in MinStore. So what this means is we have a new file system which delivers some pretty exciting new capabilities, but from an API perspective, there's a lot of similarity and overlap intentionally with NTFS. So most of the APIs that developers are familiar with will just work on REFS.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
How about some last parting thoughts on what someone should do to prepare for RAFS? Some, you already mentioned a target project and file server. What would you say would be some good actions for people to go off and try?
Well, so in Server 2012, RAFS is limited to data volumes only. That's kind of what we think makes sense from a scenario perspective, because this is designed to provide resiliency and scale and a high degree of uptime. That's usually appropriate for data volumes. And obviously that's something that we will plan to change at some point in the future. But it's a good time to take a look at trying RAFS out. It's something that we think is offering some new capabilities around things like data integrity and a high degree of uptime. So customers who have data and customers who have some available hardware and interest in trying RAFS out, we would absolutely encourage them to do that and see if they get some benefits from the new capabilities.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to chat with me. I really appreciate it, and thanks a lot for being on the Edge Show.
Yeah, I'm happy to take the time. Really excited about RAFS and everything that's part of Windows Server 2012.
Okay, we're back. Hopefully you guys liked that particular video. Hey, apologies on the audio quality. I'm trying my best. I might have had a mic problem, but for the most part, some really good information in there about RAFS, about storage spaces, and how they work together. If you're interested in giving us some comments about this particular show or future shows, you're welcome to email us at edge@microsoft.com or leave a comment down below inside the comment area. You can also catch us on the Twitter if you're interested, with TNEdge is the username that we follow, and the hashtag as well. Let us know what we're doing. Any suggestions for future shows, and any other comments. Let us know. Have a great day, and we'll see you next week.